I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ, and archived on TVTimeMachine.com.
A little girl here got a huge shock today.
Great story. Her dad made it back from Iraq just in time to surprise her on the very last day of school.
It was the culmination of 350 days of waiting to be back with my daughter and my family. I missed an entire fourth grade year, and my goal was to be back for at least her last day so I could say I was there. It was awesome.
And I don't really remember what happened because I was so happy.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to embark on a journey through a vast galaxy that traverses memory, generations, and popular culture. A magical trip through time as we meet the men and women of yesterday and today who have shaped not only what we see on TV, but the way we see ourselves. I'm Jim Benson. Join me, if you will, on an exploration of television's past, present, and future as we climb aboard the TV Time Machine. Our destination subject today will be Lifetime Television's reality series, Coming Home. Host Matt Rogers will join us to help navigate this particular excursion into this poignant and patriotic TV series. We'll begin our exciting and fun-filled odyssey right after these brief messages.
I was born Mary Tyler Moore.
It's Jesse Donald Knotts.
Fred McFeely Rogers.
Leslie Moonves.
Isabel Sanford.
Leslie Renee Stahl.
Robert Edward Turner.
Regis Francis Philbin.
Aaron Spelling.
Since 1999, the Archive of American Television has been preserving the memories, knowledge, and insights of the men and women whose talents and vision have helped shape this remarkable medium. Over 500 video interviews with these TV legends are now available on the Archive of American Television website at metvlegends.org. There, you can sign up to receive news, updates, and also become a sponsor to help preserve television history for generations to come. That's metvlegends.org.
The mythological proportions of Star Trek provide something that's missing in people's consciousness, psyche.
The Archive of American Television, capturing television history, one voice at a time. Today on the TV Time Machine, we are privileged to have the opportunity to honor that relatively small number of Americans who protect our vast country and its inherent freedoms with their extraordinary bravery, commitment, and sacrifice. In this edition of our program, we are proud to welcome Matt Rogers, host of Coming Home, the extraordinary television series that not only celebrates our men and women in uniform, but the joy these patriots and their families experience on that very special day when they're finally coming home. Over the next few segments, Matt Rogers will not only help us explore virtually every aspect of this remarkable series, but will also discuss his work in television as host and correspondent, and his musical career, which was most notably showcased in 2004 when Mr. Rogers was featured as a finalist on American Idol. Again, for those of you intrepid enough to take that long journey home, feel free to surprise your loved ones as we journey from the past to honor our brave warriors of the present.
I'm coming home. Yes, I'm coming home.
Matt, thank you for coming on board the TV Time Machine.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm very, very excited to be here. Thanks for that intro. That was powerful, man.
Hey, Matt, I understand that you're a SoCal guy. What was life like for you growing up, and what kind of kid were you?
I was a very rambunctious kid. I knew from young age I wanted to be in entertainment. Both my parents, I grew up in Covina, California. They did a great job at raising me. I was very close to both of my parents. And I always had this dream inside of me that just wouldn't leave me alone, that whether I was hitting record on my cassette tape and recording my own radio shows, or when we got our first VHS camera that was bigger than my whole body and I would try to hold it and record myself and make my own TV shows, I always knew that that was that thing that gave me that feeling in my stomach that, okay, that's what I'm here for. I need to be doing that stuff. So I knew at a young age that this is what I wanted to do. And the type of kid I was is I was all over the place, man. I never forget one time in church, my pastor came off the pulpit and pulled gum out of my mouth and shoved it in my ear because I was snapping my gum in church. So that's the kind of kid I was.
So it's true in your bios that I've read that you started singing when you were five?
I did. I started singing at a young age. I just, you know, I loved being, you know, I was in church a lot as a kid, so I loved being in all the Christmas plays, the Easter plays, the holiday, you know, the Valentine's, whatever it was. I loved singing, and it wasn't that I was very good, because I really wasn't, to be honest with you, but my parents inspired me and they encouraged me so much that my mom always fed me positive reinforcement to where I really thought I was a good singer. So I just kept singing because I thought I was good because she told me I was good.
So you were really lucky. You had parents that supported you. Sounds like you had parents that supported you 100% in everything that you wanted to do.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I couldn't have asked for, you know, God couldn't have gave me better parents. They were always there for me. My dad was the dad. He worked hard as an insulator. He was in the trade for, you know, 50 years and never missed one of my baseball, basketball, or football games. Even when I would, you know, go into college, my first scholarship was to the University of Iowa before I played in the Rose Bowl for the University of Washington, and my dad never missed one game. And it didn't matter what was going on in life. Dad was always there, and that I'll never forget that, ever.
Well, you mentioned that you played in the Rose Bowl for the University of Washington. What was that experience like?
Well, the other truth is that I was never really any good in football. I mean, I was the kid, my freshman year, I was 5'7", 210 pounds, and what we would call today a soft. So I was the soft, slow, fat kid that wasn't very good. And I played one play my freshman year. I quit football my sophomore year because everyone told me that I stunk and I didn't have any confidence. And then back in the day when you didn't play a sport, you were in PE. So it just so happens that one day the head football coach was my substitute PE teacher, and he saw me, and he just breathed life into me. He said, "What are you doing out here? You need to come play football. I will help you. I will coach you, and I will make you a football player because that's what you're supposed to be." And that encouragement basically pulled that warrior out of me. And my junior and senior year, I played every single play with the varsity team. So from there, I got my first scholarship to the University of Iowa, played under Hayden Fry. And then when he retired, Coach Neuheisel and I was blessed enough to get a full-ride scholarship to the University of Washington my senior year. So
wow.
I redshirted my senior year, and then my fifth-year senior, I played and started, you know, all the games, and we beat Drew Brees and Purdue in the Rose Bowl 34-24. So it's
wow.
It's a cool story, you know, from where I was, you know, 7 years prior to that, you know, listening to one freshman coach saying, "Yeah, you're not very good, you'll probably never play," to sitting in my office right now, literally looking at my Rose Bowl jersey, Rose Bowl trophy, and Rose Bowl helmet, picture of me on the Seattle Times with a big rose hanging out of my mouth. It's unbelievable what I'm looking at right now, because there's no way that 5'7", 210-pound kid could have ever done this. So, and it's all, you know, if I can just go a step further, it's all about, you know, all of us have a coward inside of us and a warrior inside of us, and most people tap into that coward and just kind of roll over and play dead, and it takes that one person to pull the warrior out of you and make you realize, you know, the gift that God put inside you, that all of us have it, and that's the thing that keeps you up at night, that doesn't let you sleep, and that's called your dream and your purpose. And most people just let it die inside of them and never pursue it, but it took that one coach, you know, and at a young age, my mom, and then getting older, my coach, to pull that out of me, and now I'm looking, like visually looking at my destiny on my wall in my office, and it's pretty awesome.
Now, Matt, how did you go from the University of Washington to American Idol ultimately?
Well, after I graduated college in 2001, I did the whole NFL thing. Long story short, I was on the Cincinnati Bengals for a day before
really?
I got cut.
Okay.
I got my day underneath me. I was a Bengal for a day. I was a professional football player for one day. And, you know, the truth is there were guys who had way more talent than I was, bigger, stronger, faster. And the truth was I didn't want to wake up at 27, 28 years old still trying to be a football player. I wanted to meet a woman, have a family, you know, and I wanted to make some money. And I wanted to be a businessman. And so I came home, got in the mortgage business. You know how great the mortgage business was from 01 to 04.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was leading the charge down here in Southern California with that, so that was a huge blessing. And it was in 2003 that the head boss that we were all working for takes us out to this really nice dinner in San Diego for all the top five leaders in the company. So we're, you know, sitting there around the round table, and boss starts having a couple drinks. He's throwing a couple back, and he starts saying, "Hey, room around the table. Rogers, you can sing opera. Get up, stand up in front of this whole restaurant and sing opera," which wasn't going to happen because, you know, it's, you know, one of those restaurants where there's a piano player in there and the waiters, you know, pull the top off when they give you their food and they got the white towel on their arm. So I'm like, no way. Well, he ends up getting to $500. He goes, "Rogers, I'll give you $500 if you stand up and sing opera." So I grab the cash, stand up, and to the top of my lungs just belt out, and I just start singing opera. The whole restaurant stops and looks at me, and then about 2 seconds after I started singing, like, one clap turned into three claps, turned into 20 claps, and the whole freaking place went nuts. And this guy walks up to me and says, "Hello, mate, my name is Nigel Lithgow. I'm the executive producer for a show called American Idol. You should come out to the Rose Bowl in 3 weeks and try out."
No, you're kidding.
Oh, yeah. So,
you're kidding.
No, it was awesome. So I'm like, all right. So
that's, I guess, like a scene from a movie.
You know, totally, like a divine appointment or something.
Yeah.
So I go home and I tell my girlfriend at the time, who's my wife now, and she went out and we went to the Rose Bowl and, you know, and I tried out and it, you know, there's stories there too, but that's how I got on American Idol.
Now I know what your brother Tim meant when he said you're like Forrest Gump. That things just happen to you, but he also said you also make things happen.
You know, I believe 100% in the favor of the Lord, because I've seen too much stuff throughout my whole life to not believe. And I'm not talking about stuff that, you know, you take faith to believe. I'm talking about visual stuff that I've seen in front of my eyes that can only be explained as that. But also, you know, a lot of people talk about faith, but they sit on their couch and they pray and wait for things to happen. And that's not what real faith is. Faith is an action. And waiting on God isn't mean sit on your couch and wait for something to miraculously appear in your lap. Waiting on God means taking the actions, taking the steps, and waiting until that moment comes. You know, success is when opportunity and readiness meet. And that defines success. So I'm constantly sowing the seed, moving the train, and I'm waiting for my moment, and I'm not going to get caught off guard. I mean, there's been so many different times in my life where I'm standing there and, you know, the person that's supposed to sing doesn't show up, or the guy that's supposed to guest speak doesn't show up, and, well, who can we have? And I'm like, dude, I'm ready. Call my number. Like, I'm constantly ready for that. So, yeah, the Forrest Gump thing for sure, but I'm ready for it to happen. You know, I'm waiting for the next thing. And so that's why I try to constantly, you know, stay as close as I can to the Lord and hear that still small voice. So when the road comes my way, which is happening every single day, that I make the right choice. Now, by no means am I going to stand here and tell you I've never made a mistake, because we could talk about my mistakes all day long. And I don't, you know, and ultimately it's, you know, I want to turn, I've had a million messes, and I want to turn those messes into a message. And, you know, my setbacks into a comeback. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm still a human like everyone else. I make just as many, if not more, mistakes than anyone else. And it's constantly improving yourself and making right decisions, you know?
Well, you made the decision, obviously, to audition for American Idol. And you performed in the semifinals, I believe. You performed the song "What You Won't Do for Love," as we'll hear in the following clip.
No. And I came back to let you know, got a thing for you, and I can't let go. What you won't do for love. You tried everything, but you won't give up. In my world, made me do for love what I would not do.
made me do for love what I would not do.
Now, Matt, what was that experience like for you?
That was awesome because at the time, I thought that I did okay. Like, I thought that I'd, okay, like, right when I hit that last note, dropped the mic to my wayside, I'm like, okay, I did pretty good. That was pretty nice. That was pretty nice. And then I get to Simon, and you probably don't have that clip, but I get to Simon, and he looks at me, and he goes, I'm sorry, Matt, but I think you just blew a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Wow.
And that hurt because I was like, no, I thought I was good enough to get. So that's literally like someone coming up and punching you right in the stomach. And I went away super discouraged. I picked the wrong song. I did this. I did that. And it was bad. But we all know that Simon doesn't know everything. And the next night, I got voted through to the top 12, which was fantastic. And I kind of pointed to Simon, gave him a little wink, and blew him a kiss, like, ha-ha, got you on this one. So it was awesome.
By the way, did you get to know him or Paul Abdul? And what kind of folks were they? What was your experience with them?
I really did. I mean, they're all three way different people. I got to see a little bit of a personal side. I mean, I was closer with Simon than any of the other judges. And, you know, Paula and Simon have really, really good hearts. Like, they really have good intentions. And the closer that I got with Simon, I mean, he was one of the people who helped me out the most after I got voted off because I finished number 11, which was kind of a blow to me, and it was tough. But, you know, he helped me a lot after I got voted off Idol. He gave me his cell number, and I talked to him a couple times, and, you know, just little stuff to help me out that I don't know if you want me to go there or not, but
sure.
He helped me out a great deal. He's got a good heart. I mean, he personality-wise, he is in real life the way he is. He's very arrogant, very confident, and
very honest.
Very honest. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like, dude, I would rather have one of those friends than be surrounded by 50 people who tell me yes and how great I am all day. You know what I mean? Like, he's the real deal, and I always appreciated that about him.
Yeah, because somebody being honest with you will help you.
100%.
Well,
and I mean, and looking back now, when I got voted off, number 11, I thought at the time, this is a great song, and America's going to be able to see the soft side of me. And he looked at me, and he said, you're going to get voted off because of that song. It was cheesy. It was soft. It wasn't you. He goes, you basically sold out. And at the time, you know, I'm 24 years old. I'm like, why is this guy being so mean to me? But now, you know, 8 years later, looking back, you know, and it didn't take long to realize, maybe like a month after, like, you know, he was 100% right. And looking back now, I mean, if I did have a regret in my life, it was my top 11 performance because I sat on a step, I smiled in the camera, I sang Amazed by Lone Star. It was during Country Week. I was the favorite to go through that week because I'm a country guy. And I just picked the wrong song. There's no other way around it. I should have threw on a cowboy hat, strapped on a Toby Keith song, and screamed, how do you like me now, and danced around the stage. And I mean, like, that's what I should have did, and I didn't do it, and it costed me. So that's the one regret if I'm laying on my deathbed. It is. Dang it, what a waste. Should have sang a different song.
Well, I think one song that is you is the Coming Home song.
Yes.
Tell me how that came about.
Well, when I got the show, we started filming. We filmed our very first episode in November of 2010. And I called my buddy, who I met was the worship leader at the church that I go to. And when I originally saw this guy, I'm like, I need to be around that dude. He is an unbelievable musician, and that dude can help me be a better musician. So at first I was going to say, can you train me? Can you help me, you know, help me sing? And I turned into, you know, it turned into like, hey, do you like country music? And he said, yes. And he said, I have these songs. So he's an unbelievable writer. His name is Brian Boss. And when I was filming in November 2010, I called him up and I said, dude, you're not going to believe this. I'm on this unbelievable show. Here's what it's about. Let's try to write the theme song for the show because they haven't done anything with that yet. Again, what we were looking, you know, talking about before is about opportunities and looking at certain things. Well, I could have sat there and done nothing about it, or I could have gotten after it, and I got after it. I called up my buddy. I said, let's write the theme song for the show. He calls me back 20 minutes later. He goes, hey, let me know what you think of this. He goes, I'm coming home to where my heart has always been, where all the pastimes that made me who I am. And I had it on speaker, and the executive producer was in the car with me. He goes, holy smokes, that's fantastic. I said, dude, I'm going to be home in a week. We're going to write the whole song. We're going to record it, and we're going to submit it to Lifetime. So 2 weeks later, or a week later, we had our whiteboard up, and we were throwing out all these military phrases, you know, pride, honor, you know, fighting country. And we wrote the song, and I sing the lead, and he does the background and the melodies on top, and we submit it to Lifetime, and they loved it. And now it's become the poster mark for the show, which is incredible. It's awesome.
Well, Matt, we're going to have to take a little break from our fascinating journey, but never fear. I'll be back in a lightning flash with Matt Rogers, host of Lifetime Television's Coming Home, who is riding along with us on the TV Time Machine.
The days feel like weeks. The weeks turn into years. I can still see your cheeks holding up them tears after all the times I'd seen.